Some content or topics discussed could trigger a past anxiety or be sensitive or disturbing to listen to or view. Please view and listen with caution.
We did it. We did it. We did it. But it wouldn't be a Walking Tall podcast without technical difficulties or some sort of snafu. It's just becoming who we are, right, Dr. LaRosa?
You're blaming me.
No, not. You were on time today. And Todd, you have a beautiful background, obviously. It looks like you're in the ocean or somewhere miraculously, huh?
Yeah.
It's virtual. I'm redoing my back wall, so I figured people could look at this instead of a blank white wall.
I tried to join you virtually, and I messed everything up.
I love it. I love it. Well, welcome to another live edition of the Walking Tall podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Malczewski, and alongside me is my great friend, Dr. Vanetta LaRosa and Mr. Todd Blylevin. We're the co-founders of the Walking Tall movement, and our mission is to inspire all of humanity to be more vulnerable, approachable, and to walk tall in their lives. And it's been a little bit since the three of us have been together. Summer's kind of own the three of us in various ways. So Todd, why don't you catch us up on everything that's going on in your life and what you've been up to lately?
Well, first of all, how I'd like to just kind of start my morning in this show is I'd like to send a huge prayer and strength to my fellow Texans down in the Southwest in Kerrville that are experiencing extreme tragedy and trauma themselves through all the tragic loss that the flooding did. I spoke to some first responder friends, and they're all going through a lot right now. So praying for the recovery teams and the therapists that are on standby and ready to go down and really help. And I think, you know, we're all going to need to pray for those people like we did in North Carolina and others around our country, especially the aftermath of the trauma and tragedies that happened, as we all know all too well. Sometimes that kicks in when you get back to your families and things. And so just sending a prayer out. But I've been super busy, been traveling. I've been speaking. I was in Cody, Wyoming, speaking at a Celebrities for a Cause benefit where we were fighting cancer. And we raised hundreds of dollars, thousands, crazy money. It was amazing. Got the chance to go to a Cody Rodeo, which was really cool. But I've been speaking, working, just staying super busy and, just finding my peace as much as I possibly can and just enjoying life. So, yeah. How about you guys?
Exciting for you, man. I didn't know you were in Cody, Wyoming.
Wyoming.
And yeah. The rodeo is right up your alley, isn't it?
I'm a big cowboy, so.
I know you are. And Dr. LaRosa. I see you there, Todd. And Dr. LaRosa, you've been in close contact with me and Todd. This is kind of your first summer with no baseball, and you know that's kind of been a change for you. But catch us up on everything that's been going on in your life and all you got going on this summer.
You know, without baseball, I'm lost and I have nothing to do. So I am just working. I'm doing some neuropsych, I'm teaching a lot. I have great students. I'm helping hands is amazing. And I'm doing everything I can there with the team. So, you know, it's bittersweet. I mean, you know, Vito took a little time to get himself stronger and figure some stuff out. Baseball will always be a part of him. But this summer, you know, it just didn't work out. So, you know, we're getting ready for his trip to Wisconsin and his new beginning there. So,
well, listen, if you want any baseball in your life, you're more than welcome to come check out the 15U SBA Raiders here in Illinois, the team that I'm coaching. And we need some cheerleaders and we need some good juju for tonight's game. We have a game at 4:00 this afternoon. We're playing in a perfect game tournament. And
do to go to a perfect game tournament.
Hey, hop on a flight. Come on.
But, I miss it.
Well, truly. And for me, this summer has been extremely busy, obviously, as a single dad, you know, working as hard as I can to build Hell Hill Auctions and promote the Walking Tall movement and now coaching baseball once again. But coaching baseball and being on the field with those 12, 15-year-old young men has just been the honor of a lifetime. And I say that with sincerity only because when I was coaching so many years ago professionally as my career, you know, my perspective was different then. And now through the work we're doing together with the Walking Tall movement, my lived experiences, hearing from great folks like the two of you and Mark Fucarillo, who we're going to hear from shortly, has really shaped how I approach the field on a daily basis. And I know it's really shaped how you approach life on a daily basis. And same with you, Dr. LaRosa. And, you know, Todd, I want to commend you. Thank you for bringing to our attention and what happened in Texas. That is certainly a tragic, traumatic experience and breaks my heart every day as more news comes out because there's so many children involved, right? And not that traumatic experiences in general aren't, you know, mind-blowing in certain senses, as we're going to hear about today. But yeah, it's really been a humbling week to hear all that's going on. And obviously, as the three of us being parents, as is Mark, I can only imagine what those folks are going through. So we're here for you. Please reach out and keep walking tall. So
that's right.
Thank you for the prayer, Todd. That
yeah, we need it. And so, as I mentioned, we're getting ready to welcome what I believe is one of the most inspiring guests we've ever had on our show. Mr. Mark Fucarile, if you don't know, is a survivor and thriver of the Boston Marathon bombing, which occurred on April 15th in 2013. One of the most traumatic experiences as a society we have had to endure. And in many cases, Todd, I know you and I are going to be able to relate because a marathon is much like a concert, is much like a parade. You show up expecting to have the greatest day of your life and celebrate a miraculous feat or two. And before you know it, something horrific happens. But the reason why Mark is so inspiring, not only because of his survival and how he endured that day, but he's doing something because of it as well. And through his remarkable foundation, he's offering assistance for individuals facing mobility challenges like himself. And he also has what's called the Mark Network, where he is working as hard as he can to bring as many resources together in one-stop shop for people with various abilities to find products, to have resources, to have a community, no different than we're doing with the Walking Tall movement. And as Mark and I've chatted offline, you don't have to be able to walk and you don't have to be tall to walk tall. And so we're so excited. And see, if you don't mind backstage, please bring Mark to the show and we'll get this thing started, huh? There he is. Listen, for those of you that don't follow Mark on social media, you absolutely have to. And Mark, you're going to know why I asked you this question, but where in the world is Mark today? And I say that only because Mark on his social media, he travels all throughout the country meeting great people. And he always starts, well, where in the world is Mark today? And so, Mark, where are you?
Right now we're in Destin, Florida. We just came from Milton, Florida. We drove from Texas. We're in the RV. So Todd, man, I appreciate the prayers down there in Texas. We're right out in Belton, not far from all that. We had some tragedy in our area as well, in Austin and Georgetown and Burnett. I mean, it's been devastating, unfortunately, for those families. I can't even imagine.
Yeah,
and Dr. LaRosa, why I'm in Florida is
perfect game.
You're at a perfect game tournament.
That's where we are. We took my nephew down here. He's playing on a team from Texas that is out here playing, and they're gonna fight their way through the bracket today to get to the championship.
Oh my goodness!
Between them and another Texas team, they had.
I'm gonna have to like follow you guys around so I could get my fill of baseball.
That just gives me even more goosebumps because, Mark, you may not know, if not for the great game of baseball, I would not know Todd and we would not know Dr. LaRosa. And the fact that you have an affection and affinity for the great game just makes this even more so complete, if you will.
And well, if you think about it, right? I mean, come on, God puts everybody in where they need to be. Mm-hmm. Boston Marathon bombing was in April 15, 2013. What happened to the Red Sox, right? So their team went from last to winning the 2013, right, World Series, to then going to last again the year after. So the only thing that changed was the marathon bombing, right? And like you said, baseball. Here you two are, baseball, right? I don't know, the great American pastime, right? The sport, I don't know. Maybe God has a bigger hand in baseball than we knew. You know,
I think he throws the ball every once in a while.
We pray to those baseball gods all the time. And, you know, Mark, we want to get into a little bit of your story. And obviously, you're a great man on many, many levels. But you, like Todd and I and Dr. LaRosa, in our own ways, experienced one of the more horrific tragedies and traumas in our nation's history. And I want to just get a little bit more of your backstory before the circumstance and before April 15th. And so I'm going to give you the floor, man. It's yours for a few minutes. Let us know who you are, what you're all about, what you experienced. And then later on in the show, we'll get into what we're doing about it.
Yeah, of course. Mark Fucarillo. I grew up in a small little town outside of Boston, Massachusetts, Stoneham. Typical life, you know, high school athlete, you know, just involved in a whole bunch of stuff. Traveling, like you said, Todd, everywhere. And, you know, I had a buddy that graduated a few years behind me who went into the Marines. And when he would come back from deployment, we'd go down and pick him up and take him out. Got to Camp Lejeune, take him down to Myrtle Beach, party with him, and just to get his mind, you know, back from where he just came from. And on April 14th, I get a phone call from my buddy JP, and he says, "Mark, we're going to the marathon tomorrow. You're coming." And I'm like, "No, I'm not. I'm not going." And he said, "Well, Mike J's running. He's running in honor of soldiers he served with and everything. So he's like, we're going to go support him." I'm like, "All right, if it's Mike J, I'm gonna go to support Mike J." And the rest is history. You know, on April 15th, that day, we were watching the marathon. And as we were watching it, we looked down at the finish line and boom, the first bomb went off. 12 seconds later, the second bomb went off, and it happened to be just right against my right leg. I was standing in front of the Forum restaurant with my group of friends. There was eight of us there. Six of us were pretty critical. And three of us lost our right legs.
Wow.
So, I mean, I could go into the, you know, the paddy wagon. We had to take a paddy wagon because there was no more ambulances. My, you know, screaming, yelling, the fire, being put out on fire three different times because I watched the video. My pants were blown off my body. It was bad. And I did a long, lengthy recovery. That was 45 days in the ICU at Mass General. Between the ICU and the burn unit. Then they transferred me way too early over to Spalding Rehab with three open wound vacs. And I was there for 55 days. And then I did the remainder of 2013 searching for hospitals and doctors to fix my left leg and fix my right leg better so I could actually get a prosthetic or I could actually walk because my left leg was pretty severe too. And then also worrying about, I have shrapnel in my heart. It went up through the artery and lodged in the right atrium. My body's livid in debris, metal, BBs. Like, we play connected dots. You could pick out the constellations, you know?
Wow.
You're the Big Dipper. And,
yeah, 100%. And then I ended up having one of the other marathon bomber survivors, Jessica and Patrick Downs, Jessica Kensky and Patrick Downs, they advocated for me down there because me and Jessica were fighting to keep our second leg. We were like sharing resources for 2 years. And she introduced me to a physical and occupational therapist out at Ski Spectacular out in Breckenridge, Colorado. We were out there skiing with Disabled Sports USA. And they saw my leg and they were like, "Oh my gosh, my residual limb, my stump." Can we take pictures to show the doctors? And because at Walter Reed, the doctors and physical and occupational therapists are such a team. They're like, they work together side by side. It's not, this is my patient. No, this is our patient. How do we help him? It was amazing to witness because they advocated for me. The doctors looked at my situation and they realized they could help. So they had to fight and fight. They had to fight and fight to get me there. And they were able to build my private insurance. It was in 2015, April of 2015, I got in. And they would build my private insurance company to have me there. And I spent a year, I had to sign a contract to go through their program for mental health, physical and occupational therapy, as well as certain surgeries and their prosthetic thing. And it was absolutely something amazing that changed my world and changed my life. And then I got involved in all these nonprofits.
Yeah, I know. And I want to, you know, key in on something. And as I've gotten to know you and as we've talked, as you know, Dr. LaRosa and Todd and I, are very, very heavily focused on mental health. And Todd, similarly, I, similarly to you, have experienced, you know, the worst of the worst and some horrific events that have really done, I don't want to say damage, but have provided perspective and given us a passion in mental health. And I think as an able-bodied person, right, the three of us and anyone listening for that matter could understand to a degree the physical ramifications of that, as you explained, right? Losing your right leg below the knee, having to fight for your left, etc. And you just mentioned mental health. So if you don't mind, you know, talk a little bit about what this experience did to you mentally and how you overcame and got to be as remarkable as you are today, for lack of a better word.
It's wild, right? I mean, I have the physical, right? So it's easy for people to see mine, but do I believe there is a bigger invisible disability in the sense of mental health with people that went through what I went through and seen what I was a part of, right? Those individuals seeing that smell and, you know, that mental part was, I couldn't even imagine, to be honest with you. I was blessed to not really have seen much of it, or since I was in and out of consciousness, mm-hmm. but I was pretty conscious. I was talking and engaging, but mental health, it's, I put my heart and trust in my faith in my Lord Jesus Christ. I mean, that's what saved me, I think, more than anything, because, you know, that and you know, I think he put people in my life that supported me properly. I think support, like, so that's a big part of my message when I'm talking is, you know, two evil people did an evil thing that day, but millions of people helped me. So the good outweighs the bad. And I've actually visually witnessed and experienced that. So that's what made my mental and, you know, trauma a little less, I think, because I can see that. And it's what we choose to focus on. If we choose to focus on the negative, we'll stay in the negative. If you choose to focus on the positive, I believe that we could be, you know, we could get through everything. So mental health, man, I'm a big supporter of it. My son struggles with it on occasions. He's now in a very great place. You know, he had his time through that. We worked through that. I, like Todd, like you were saying, traveling, like I was traveling and speaking. I went from Texas up to Boston, Boston to Jersey, Jersey back to Boston for the marathon. And after that, me and my wife drove out to Indiana, Kentucky, ran on the line. And I spoke for a nonprofit organization called Brandon's House. It's a free mental health service for teenagers and their families that are contemplating suicide. So we did a big fundraiser. They had a big fundraiser that they put on. They asked me to be the keynote speaker. I went up there and, you know, me and my wife, and I was the speaker and raised a lot of money up there and then drove back down to Texas. Then a couple of days later, I drove the RV back up to Boston to get it wrapped. And then I drove, waited for my son to graduate. I get out of school his junior year, and me and him drove to Chicago to the Abilities Expo where I met Chris. But I mean, mental health, I mean, I think the biggest thing is as a person that is struggling with, you know, their mental health, I mean, the most important thing is ask for help, find support, find somebody, because that's what's got me to where I am today, man. It's those physical and occupational therapists that supported me and motivated me to, you know, get up, get going, get moving. My family doing all that they do, you know, and that's it. It's just support. We have to support one another. We're all in the same boat. We're all struggling with challenges. And you talk like my event was a bigger event. Like every event, as small as it is, it's all the same. It's traumatizing. It doesn't matter if you lose a limb or if it's something you witness or you're just a part of or close by or something that you've seen that triggers some kind of reaction. I mean, I think it's all relevant. It's all as big or, you know, as amazing. Each other's.
And what I just heard, you know, to wrap up what you just said so beautifully is community, right? And Mark, you don't know how I met Todd, but I didn't know Todd, but from my experience, and 3 days after the 4th of July in 2022, Todd was so vulnerable and approachable and made himself available to me via text through a mutual connection because of baseball. And again, I attribute much of my healing not only to the work we do here with Dr. LaRosa, but largely to Todd's friendship and mentorship, right? And having that sense of community could only expedite the quote-unquote healing journey, knowing that others have experienced things similar, others have mental health hurdles to overcome. And Todd, I just know, I see you shaking your head as Mark was speaking. Aside from the physical, I mean, everything, what's going on in your head right now?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, anytime you hear a story like Mark's, and, you know, Mark, I'm so glad you're here, first of all, and praise to God as well. You know, it's my beacon of strength. It's my pillar that I latch onto in those rough waters. And it's what carries me forward, along with the peer support that was placed in front of me like you mentioned, and then the therapy part. So those three pillars of strength are my strength moving forward to help me fight my trauma every single day. And when you hear something that you went through from my side, you know, being in that Las Vegas shooting and running for your life and being in that moment, I can understand where you were at, although the severity was different, of course, right? Thank God I wasn't injured. I thought I was at one point, but I carried out a lot of the marks, the people that were severely injured and lost some. And so from a witness perspective and the smells that you talk about, it brings back that night for me, which I think that's sometimes God's way to be able to ground me as well, to help me realize the path that I've taken to move forward. And you hit on something that I thought was really important. You didn't choose to dwell in the darkness. You chose to reach for the light and to continue moving yourself forward. And you were willing to do whatever it took. And the challenge, like the time you spent, I can't even imagine the hospital time, the alone time, the moment of silence that I talk about a lot, the contemplating probably all those things going, why me, all these things with you. And then this just uplift with the doctors and everyone that God placed around you. I thought your story is just truly incredible and remarkable. I'm so glad you're sharing it.
Todd, so when you talk about that being in the hospital and being alone and that downtime and you're thinking and you're whining, like my son was 5. I was with him 24 hours a day, pretty much. Oh, not 24 hours a day, but I was his, you know, I would drop him off at daycare, go to work, pick him up from daycare, bring him home, do everything. And my son was my world for every day. And I dropped him off to daycare and then I went to the marathon and then he didn't see me for 2 weeks until they let him finally come see me in the hospital. And, that was tough. Then him, you know, I'm laying there and I didn't care about me, like, you know, getting through that time, reaching for the light, like I found something to focus on and it was my son. All I cared about was to live for my son. In a moment, I recommend people when you're struggling is to find that one thing to hold on to. Eventually you need to get through it for yourself. But at the time of the darkest and deepest minutes, like in your struggling, you find that one, you know, beacon of light. Like mine was my son. And that was what I fought for. And I fought for him and I fought for many years until, you know, he was big enough and I felt he was in a better place and like we were good. And then that's when I found my now wife, you know, and I went out and I started trying to live for me, you know, and, you know, I did things for me, but I literally held on to my son and I fought to show him that, you know what, like when you get knocked down, you got to get up. Right. So, and I didn't do it for me. I did it for him. You know what I mean? I got knocked down and I did it for the people, the complete strangers that supported me. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens when you become a part of a community. It's no longer about you. And, you know, it's never about us. You know, it always needs to be about the community and how you serve God or, you know, whoever. And, you know, that's what I was doing in my time. I was, you know, I was fighting for my son and I was fighting to show the community of people that were supporting me that didn't know me. I didn't want to let them down. So, you know, there are definitely stages, right, Chris and Doctor, you know, it's stages in that recovery that you do things, I believe. And, you know, and I was doing it for others until it just worked out to me starting to do it for myself. And now I'm able to be 100% present to give back.
Amazing. And I want to just say quick, Dr. LaRosa, we'll get to you in a second, but all four of us are parents, right? And after my experience, July 4, 2022 in Highland Park, right? I was knocked down. And just like you, Mark, I looked at my two beautiful children on a daily basis and tried to be the best version of myself. And I didn't always succeed at times, right? I was in shock. I was traumatized. I made bad decisions and bad comments and things of that sort. But as my community uplifted me and as I became great friends with Dr. LaRosa and Todd and many others here in Illinois, I realized there was hope. There was a community of support behind me that I couldn't let down aside from my two beautiful children. And, you know, like you, I didn't mention, but, you know, this past week was, you know, the 4th of July, a week ago today. And for the first time ever, I walked in a parade since that experience alongside my daughter and her dance team. And Mark, truly, you gave me inspiration because as I've started to do a little bit of research about you and your story, seeing you complete and finish the Boston Marathon several times since your experience proved to me that, like, hey, if Mark can do it, I can do it. And I think we just lost Dr. LaRosa. I don't know if she's here or not, but you know, we haven't talked about that very much, Todd, right? The impact of having children as a trauma survivor and what motivates us in that sense. And I know with Dylan and Gracie, you know, accredit a lot of your healing aside from your faith to their presence in your life. So you want to just talk about that briefly?
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. And again, you know, like you mentioned, Mark, and I know Chris, you've mentioned this a ton as well. Like, trauma's trauma, right? You don't have to go through a bombing. You don't have to go through a shooting. You don't have to be completely devastated and in the hospital to experience trauma. Trauma's trauma. Like, we all deal with things in our lives. And when I got back from Vegas and I'm sitting in my truck at DFW airport and wondering, I've got to go pick up my kids at my son's baseball game. How am I supposed to be a dad right now with everything that I just witnessed? How am I supposed to go to work the next day? How am I supposed to be a good neighbor? How am I supposed to even function in life? And it's that motivation right there where your internal strength, like you said, Mark, you reach for something that is good and wholesome and powerful. And you say, okay, I need to fight myself back to get to that point because I need that reconnection. I need to be strong for my family. I need to be strong for my kids. I need to be strong for my friends. And then the peer support piece that people are calling you all the time, you don't want to let them down. So the more you can talk to someone about their trauma and make sure, even if it's a text message saying, hey, brother, you okay? Just thinking about you today. Just wanted to say hi. I'm praying for you. Whatever. That text right there uplifts you in a moment where maybe I'm thinking something dark. Maybe I'm in this silent moment. I don't want to think about that stuff. So I focus solely on the light and solely on trying to help myself. It took me a while to get there because we're all raised with this, you know, no help mentality. I can do it myself. And finally, I was broken. I needed help, and I'm so glad that I was able to reach out for it and raise my hand. And that's what we're doing we all do this today, right? We're all saying, "Hey, we were all knocked down. Now we're raising our hand, and we're saying, if you're knocked down, we're here to help you, and you need to help others as well."
Amazing. Well, as I mentioned earlier, it wouldn't be a Walking Tall podcast without Dr. LaRosa or having a technical difficulty. And Dr. LaRosa, I know you too well. You've been chomping at the bit, and I can only imagine hearing Mark's story, not only what he went through and you being an East Coaster yourself and probably having experienced that differently than Todd or I being Midwesterners, but also hearing the support he got from professionals like yourself, both in the physical and mental space, health space. I could only imagine you have so many things to say, so the floor is yours.
Yeah. You know, each time I meet one of our guests and I hear a story like Mark's, you know, this is a faith-based day. I pray to the Holy Spirit to enlighten my mind, to be able to understand your circumstance and to be able to offer insights and supports that just even could help one person will do my job here, you know, in the Walking Tall movement. And from what I could hear from your story and the way that you told it and what you connected to, you are a positive, empathetic person with a very logical and intelligent way of solving problems. But to think about your experience, the physical pain, the mental pain, the time spent, the worry is something that you couched so positively for others that I just want to bring everybody back to the fact that those elements of your journey must have been extraordinarily taxing on you as a person, and just living day to day and healing yourself and trying to live the life of a vulnerable patient versus the person that you were before that experience is a huge mental undertaking. It is a huge mental undertaking to have not only your physical body undergo all of that, but also mentally and psychosocially, all of these new relationships and experiences, as uplifting as they are, it presents a huge amount of change in a very short period of time. And so all of those things really do weigh very heavily upon a person's mental health. And the various directions that a person can go after experiencing that level of trauma on so many different levels is hugely dependent not only on the person that they are and the ability that they have to be positive and carry forward, but as we've all said, the community around them that is supporting their journey. So mental health professionals, medical professionals, people personally, and just anyone on the street, in the store, that can give you a smile and give you positivity that adds to your bucket of strength and your ability to pull from it when all of those mental and physical elements just weigh so heavily upon you that you're going in a different direction and maybe you're not as positive as you appear right now. Because I know people often look at someone's journey and say, well, I'm not that positive. I didn't do such a good job when I was undergoing trauma. I messed up and I did all these things. And one of my messages to people all the time is to please forgive yourself and please understand the circumstances at the time all influenced your decisions, your choices, your behavior. And we're definitely going to falter and we're definitely going to disappoint ourselves and even sometimes our loved ones, you know, unintentionally. But it's really, really important for people to understand the massive undertaking that somebody goes through mentally, you know, when talking about something like this. I mean, I can only relate by, you know, sharing with you my mother's story of when she had breast cancer and she had her double mastectomy in her surgery. She had a horrible reaction to the surgery. A necrosis developed and her body was really in a gruesome state for a pretty long period of time. Extreme pain, hyperbaric treatments, and having to watch her body, you know, disintegrate and, you know, and go through what it was going through was horrifying for her. It was horrifying for me. And unlike you, she didn't have a positive experience with her medical professionals. They dismissed her and kind of wrote her off as a cancer patient. But you know, this is all something that, in consideration of everything that you have been through, the fact that you are talking to nonprofits and living your life as you are is just a huge testament to life itself and why we do this. So sharing your story is just incredible, and I thank you so much for it.
And before we go back to you, Mark, real quick, I just want to give a couple shout-outs. We have some great support in the chat today. So Mac, how are you? Thank you so much for joining us. Jeff Walliner, thank you for coming by. Janice Shokrin, we're so excited to see you, of course. And all of these folks have been great supports of the Walking Tall movement. And speaking of great supports, one of our greatest supporter in Brilliant Bee Media and COES, a Tornrat, is backstage running this show. And she posed a great question. And so, Mark, I want to open it up to you. Without going into too much detail, who was the first person you reached out to for help? And how did you approach them?
Yeah, I noticed that question. I was going to bring that up. That's what I was really going to. But I also real quickly on, you know, on the doctor's comments, nothing was perfect. Nothing was great. Everybody can look at me so great. At times in my mental health recovery, I always thought I was good. You know, I'm like, I'm good. I'm great. Everybody's like, how you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm awesome. And I'm out living life, but I'm making poor decisions. I'm acting a certain way. My temperament with my son is poor. But I'm thinking I'm good, right? Like, I'm good. I'm Mark Fucro. I'm so strong. You know, my mom made me and built me this way, you know, because my mom was single mom who worked really hard. And, you know, she showed me if anybody, a little under 5 foot woman could, you know, Irish lady could do this, that like I could do it, you know? And so like one of the first people, it was just my friends, like really my family that were close by. And again, I was just grateful and thankful that I was alive. So I didn't, you know, see anything wrong. And, you know, and the doctor touched on the, you know, the mental trauma, the pain, the responsibility as being a father and not being able to provide properly or to do certain things. It did. It weighs. And, you know, you don't talk about it enough. I try not to focus on my past ever. I mean, as much as I talk about it all the time, but that's just what I do. I'll talk about it. But my life is in the future. Everything ahead of me is like, that's the past. Nothing will change. My leg will never come back. So I always focus on what I can control and what I can do. I don't focus on what I can't do. I'm not ballroom dancing anymore. I'm not doing all this other stuff. And that's okay. We have to accept that in life. And I'm a person that accepts everything that comes my way, my responsibility, my actions, and everything. Right. So I accept my situation, and I'm ready to move on and focus on what I can control. And that's it. That's all I do. And don't worry about what we can't, because it's not going to change. And we all know worry isn't for us. We pass it on to Jesus and God, and they take care of that. And we just keep moving. But as far as, you know, and that is a big thing. I really didn't reach out. I really thought I was okay a lot, you know, and through community is where I healed, and through, you know, my faith is where I really truly am healing. You know, and that's just me. I blew off a lot of my therapy appointments, you know, down at Walter Reed. I did. I was like, I don't need this. I'm good. And, you know, truthfully, I wasn't good. I was making horrible choices. I was just living in a dark place and didn't even know it, just because I was functioning every day, you know. And now that I reflect on where I was, I could see I wasn't good. I was good. I was functioning. I was, to the normal eye, I was good, and I thought I really truly was good, but I really wasn't.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. And, you know, having that daily text, you know, from my father, he's my best friend aside from my kids and the four of you, or three of you, four including Sia backstage, you know, but on a daily basis, I get that, yo, you good, right? And that's how my dad and I kind of banter back and forth, but I know he's there for me. And, you know, if and when I have a panic attack, he's now the first person I call to pick up the phone to help me with my breathing exercises and things of that sort. And for me, real quickly, like, Todd, I give you so much credit. You know, I'll never forget July 11th, 2022. It was a week to the day of my experience. I had this calling to go back to the site. They were doing a vigil. It was at 10:14, the exact time the shots were fired. And I remember, I don't know if you remember this, but as I walked away down the block, I lost it. I went into a full-blown panic attack. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't talk. And at the time, I didn't want my dad to bear that burden at that point. I was kind of in that shock moment still, and I knew you could understand. And just from that moment forward, I knew I had support, right? But I, like you, Mark, made bad decisions, had bad personality traits come out at times. All of these things looking back, going, who was that guy, right? And I give myself some grace, as you said, Dr. LaRosa, and some forgiveness, but it's hard to do, and knowing that maybe you burned some bridges and you acted out of character. But to your point, Mark, looking forward and finding hope in what the future provides is so, so impactful. And Todd, I know you had the same thing. You talk about that, you know, friend of your father's calling you as you sat in that car, right? What was that like for you?
Yeah, you know, the minute I got back in, sitting in my truck, like I just was speaking about, and going through that mindset of, how am I supposed to be a dad? How am I supposed to be a worker? What am I supposed to do now? All of a sudden I get this call from Lee, three-time, you know, combat vet. And he still starts talking to me about what my next 72 hours is going to look like. You're going to have your nightmares, the stuttering of speech. You're going to go through mass anxiety. You're not going to be able to sleep. You're going to have pain. He started telling me about these relatable experiences that he had as a combat soldier. Even though the two were different in a way, I went through a war. I didn't have a gun. I wasn't fighting. I was fighting to get people out. There were some differences, but he nailed the 72-hour survival guide for me. And that truly helped me. And for me, I didn't really have a chance to try to reach out. I went through this moment of like, what am I supposed to do? Because of like what Mark, you just brought up as well. I had this no blood, no foul mentality. My dad was a big league pitcher. I grew up in this house of not showing pain, not showing fear. I was strong, right? I could take anything on. I'd already proved that. But mentally on the inside, I was broken, hard, knocked down on my ass. And so for Lee to reach out, and then Chad Vert to reach out, you know, firefighter out of San Francisco, my buddy Woody that was long PD and task force, all these guys were reaching out nonstop and just giving me advice. And we had a question from Janice on holding space. Like, how do you share the balance, care, and giving space and being there for somebody that has trauma? And for them, as the receiver, I would just get drip kind of text messages every once in a while saying, hey, like Chris's dad, yo, you good? I still get that. I just got one last night from a buddy because of what's going on in Texas and people thinking about how that could be impacting me because they truly care about me as a person, right? And even though I'm far removed, I'm still connected. I'm offering my services, whatever I can do to try to help somebody, whether it's one person down there or whatever we can do as human beings to help each other through community, like you said, Chris. But it's just being there. There is no right or wrong to reaching out and just saying, how are you? Mm-hmm. You know, eventually you might be busy and don't take that. Like Chris, you mentioned, and Mark, you go through these moments where maybe you don't want to be bothered. Maybe you need your moment of silence. You need to be in that space and you're getting bombarded a little bit here and there. Don't take offense to that as a supporter, right? Understand that this, there's a whole journey there. So I'd love to kind of hear more about like the whole process from Dr. LaRosa on the giving support and knowing when you're supposed to kind of back off a little bit.
Dr. LaRosa, the floor is yours. And again, more technical difficulties. So it's my fault this time. That's what I get for poking fun at you, Dr.
I think it was my fault last time.
Yeah. So. Dr. LaRosa, the floor is yours. And then before we wrap up, we have to talk. There's so much more that Mark is doing. And Dr. LaRosa, earlier you said solving problems, and we're going to highlight the Remarkable Foundation and the Mark Network here shortly. But please answer Todd's request, if you will.
Yeah. Just to respond to Todd, you know, when we are undergoing trauma and when we are living our lives and trying to help others, we tend to compartmentalize, right? And so we keep the parts of us strong that need to be strong to do the jobs that we need to get done. But at the same time, if we're not always in touch and in tune with our own processes, our own trauma, and our own needs for support, there will be an imbalance. There will be a shift. There will be behavioral changes, and there will be physiological changes as well, because all of the stress takes its toll mentally as well as physically. It will show up, as Mark very clearly explained to us, sometimes from others' perspective first. We may not at all recognize it in ourselves, but that ability and propensity to compartmentalize, to get things done, to help ourselves and to help others, is something that many, many, many of us do just to keep going forward. And as we just keep putting everything we have into going forward each and every day for our families and for our financial health and for just the lives that we're trying to lead as successfully as possible, we often lose sight of ourselves. And nobody wants to be that person to say, I need to take a break. I need to take care of myself. I'm with you. You know, the work ethic has always been there. My parents are hardworking blue-collar people with, you know, several jobs to make ends meet. And I've watched them my whole life. And, you know, the work ethic is there. And people feel as if they can't take that sidestep and give themselves the clarity and the support that they need to get through. But it's an essential part of keeping ourselves all together. And so while I don't do a great job of it myself, and I'm still working on it, it's something that I think we should all be very, very aware of. And I've talked about this before, developing a list of antecedents, which are little things and triggers and reminders in our lives that we're not okay, understanding what those are, making that that conscious cognitive list, and then knowing in the future our lives are just about to approach something that's going to trigger us or challenge us, that's the time to enact a program of self-care and self-awareness before those things hit us, and then we have to respond in the crisis mode. Always approach things proactively to keep ourselves in balance, because it's in the crisis state that people have the most difficult time attending to those needs.
Dr. LaRosa, you just said the word proactively. And Mark, that's what I think of when I think about your work you're now doing, both with the Remarkable Foundation and the Mark Network. So if you don't mind, talk a little bit about now what's come from all of this trauma and all of these experiences that we would wish on nobody, frankly, but you're a light, man. And as I said, you're a national beacon of inspiration, and the work you're doing is so inspiring and so necessary. So once again, the floor is yours. Talk a little bit about your foundation and your network and what they're all there for and who they're there to help.
So through my recovery, I was blessed with the support of so many, you know, laying in that hospital room, I got support most people facing my challenges don't get, you know. So it wouldn't be right for me not to give back in a sense. So right after I got out of Walter Reed, I started hand cycling those marathons with the Freedom Team. I got brought into this team of wounded veterans. They adopted me with Achilles International, and I started hand cycling with these, you know, wounded veterans and doing all these marathons and traveling the country. And then I got involved in veteran nonprofit organizations to raise awareness to them, to raise money. Kids with no limb, not missing limbs and limb differences, do Camp No Limits. Granite State Adaptive Sports Program. I started volunteering my time, giving back just because so many people gave to me. And what I realized during that period of time was this community is broken. They're very fragmented as people with disabilities, and we all struggle with a lot of the same challenges, no matter our disabilities, even though they're different, but we still face the same challenges, right? It's hard to find organizations to help us and support us. It's hard to find, like, if you want to go scuba diving, like, where's a scuba diving place that my husband, who's a quadriplegic, can go scuba diving? Because he wants to, right? It's hard to find these resources. But also when you're laying in bed in that hospital room, when you get that diagnosis, or, you know, your mom gets diagnosed with cancer and she's like, oh gosh, what am I going to do? My life's over. And it's like, wait, no, it's not yet. Like, it's not like, let's, this is what's going to happen. And this is the process. So I learned and seen that, like, everybody I ever met, as soon as they got paralyzed or they lost a limb or, you know, some tragic diagnosis that is crippling their body, they thought their life was over. We all did. And then we come to find out years later, it's not. It's like, wait, we just wasted 3 years thinking our life was over. And now I'm like living. I wish I knew earlier it wasn't, so I could have lived better longer. So a lot of us also got taken advantage of by companies, right? They sold us the most profitable wheelchair, not the best wheelchair, right? So I said, I need to fix this. And how do you fix this? And I spent 11 years imagining and building this concept in my head and trying to find all these solutions. And one time it, you know, really shined a light on me was this Paralympian Jack Wallace was at Camp No Limits with his gold medal that he had just won in Sochi, Yoshi or whatever that
country is. That place.
Whatever. Yeah, that place. And these young children with missing limbs and limb differences are looking at him like he is Superman. I mean, if you look up Jack Wallace, the kid looks like Superman. Blue eyes, the hair, he's built just like Superman. He's crazy. And then he's only there for 2 days. 3 days. And then he leaves because he has to go back to camp to start training for the Olympics and other events that he's doing, world, you know, sled hockey and rowing. So I was like, these kids literally took the wind out of their sail. And I'm like, this isn't right. Like, they're not going to even maybe see him next year because he's going to be committed to traveling the world to play hockey or to row. Or, and I'm like, why can my son turn the TV on every day, you know, and watch Rob Gronkowski and Tom Brady, because that's when it was back when they actually still played. I said, why can they turn the TV on and inspire to be those athletes? But my children, who I mentor and love and care about so much, and I mean children is just kids that I mentor, they can't turn on the TV. And most of these people with mobility and disabilities are sitting at home because it's hard for us to get out. We're not watching anything that pertains to our life. So I'm like, I'm going to create a television network station. And I'm going to do this for the mobility impaired sports at the highest level and sell advertisement, pay teams, pay players, do all this stuff. But I'm like, wait, I'm one guy, right? I'm like, how am I going to do that? And that's a very expensive task. So I spent years building and figuring out. But then I realized it wasn't just sports. It was also products and services. It was also, you know, education and information and then health insurance. I'm like, oh, gosh, all these problems. So I'm like, how do you solve these? It's nothing but more than community, getting people in one location to spread the word where strengths are in our numbers. There's 2 million amputees, over 2.6 million limb difference people. There's 375,000 people with spinal cord injuries living in the United States. MS, there's over 200 people every week to get diagnosed with MS. There's 300 to 500 scheduled limb amputations every day. I'm sorry, every day in the United States, 300 to 500 every day, 185,000 new amputees every year in the United States. Our community is made up of 60 million people that control $1 trillion in spend every year. So I started digging deep, like, because what I want to create is going to be expensive, and I need to know how I can fund and make profit to fund and host what I'm creating. So I created the MARC Network. It's a free mobile app where individuals with disabilities are facing any challenge. Could be divorce, could be anything, struggling with TBI or struggling with just mental health, to communicate with others facing similar challenges. So it's like an Instagram, Facebook, Reddit, search engine for products and resources. And it's in Apple, it's in Google, it's free to download. It's pretty much global. It's an opportunity for individuals with a disability, their loved ones, or any advocate, physical, occupational therapist, wheelchair provider, prosthetist, doctors, mental health physicians, to just share resources, share information, talk about what they're doing, and share that on a daily basis. So people that don't even know they need it, like myself, as they're scrolling, they see something that might register with them and say, oh, that's a great product. Hey, that's a great idea with, you know what Todd just talked about. Like, maybe I should try that with my challenge, because that's how he overcame his. And me and him have a similar challenge. So that's what the MARC Network is. The Remarkable Foundation is my nonprofit organization. Once the MARC Network is profitable, that's what's going to fund the Remarkable Foundation. As of right now, we have 8 bibs. We raise money through the Boston Marathon. We just raised 82,000. So the Remarkable Foundation, I just actually brought in 2 hireds. I just hired 2 women, Stephanie and Abby, to run the nonprofit, to do more fundraisers, because I don't have the ability or the time and bandwidth to really run and grow the Remarkable Foundation, because I'm really focused on the MARC Network, because the MARC Network is a $1 billion business in 5 years, no problem, 10 years. It's a digital advertising marketing platform, which centralizes and allows the companies that are creating these great products for us to be able to advertise to us, so we can actually see those. Because Chris, we know, we go to the Abilities Expo. There's only 7 of those in the United States, right? There's 6 states that gets to see those. So 44 other states don't even get to see the new technology firsthand. And that's a shame. So that's what the MARC Network provides. But the Remarkable Foundation helps purchase equipment for other nonprofit organizations that service the mobility disability community. We fund a lot of events. We fund a lot of events with this small little nonprofit down in Austin, J2I, Jumping Into Conclusion, Joaquin Walking Into Inclusion. I'm sorry, I can't always say it. It's okay. But he helps low-income families with special needs, with children with special needs. So we support and sponsor his events just to help him raise money. We help Granite State Adaptive Sports. We purchased a monoski that a young boy needed to utilize. But that piece of equipment will be their piece of equipment for 10 to 20 years and be able to service 100 and touch the lives of 100 people. We purchased a hand cycle for a young lady doing the New York Marathon. She got herself in a sticky situation, ordered the bike, didn't fundraise the money. And we came in and paid the remaining balance for her so she could partake and have that bike. And she's doing amazing. She's doing marathons, 5Ks, hopes and possibilities. She's doing everything. So,
Mark, that's real quick, speaking of marathons, how many Boston marathons have you completed since your experience? Real quick. 3. Amazing.
3. I would have done a lot more, but my bib, I give my bib to another nonprofit organization called the Greg Hill Foundation. So they showed up in my hospital room early with a check to help me cover some bills while I was laying in that hospital room. So they've been there all along for us. Like Greg said, he's committed. I could reach out to him tomorrow and said, hey, Greg, I need this piece of equipment, you know, and I can't afford it. The check is written. So I give them, and that's why I've only done it 3 times. And I did it on the 10-year anniversary. And then I did it 2 times back to back, because that's what I was doing at the time. Mm-hmm. But I give the Greg Hill Foundation my bib, because they raised like $20,000 or more with my bib. And he helps local families in the New England area, because he's a talk show host for a radio station on WEEI Sports Radio. And, you know, so the good he does is amazing. And by my thank you to them for what they did for not just me, they helped tons of Boston Marathon bombing survivors. They wrote checks for everybody, like a lot of the survivors they wrote checks for. And they're still writing checks to this day. He's still raising money for the marathon bombing survivors, because he knows, he goes, this doesn't just end, this keeps going, and these families and people that suffer this need continuous help. And he's right, and so that's why I give my bib.
You just inspire the heck out of us. I hope you
this
know that.
This level of inspiration is absolutely remarkable.
But we're running short on time. I feel like we could keep going for hours and hours and hours. And so as we get to wrap up, Todd, I would just love to hear some parting thoughts you have as we say goodbye to Mark and those watching. This I told you this was going to be a good one.
Yeah. Mark, you're a true warrior, brother. Keep fighting the fight. Keep walking tall, man, all the way through and through. Any way that I could ever help you in your efforts, please reach out. I know we'll be connected, but I'd love to help support your cause. And, you know, just the more voices that are out there and amplifying what you're doing, that's how people hear it. So you're providing survival guides for people to learn that they, you know, they've been knocked down. They're missing a limb, whatever that situation is, but they can, man, they can stand back up. They can move forward in their life with positivity, and you're just a true beacon. So thank you for doing everything you're doing, and God bless you, brother. But being a fellow Texan, we better connect. So
that's it. Let's go. Get that RV down to Todd's driveway, would you?
And Dr. I'm up in Frisco, by the way.
Yeah.
Dr. I'm up in Frisco. I'm playing at the Rough Riders again on August 5th. You should come out to the get your dad to come to the celebrity softball game. Reach out. We'll connect after this. I'll get you connected.
Wait, I might be participating in
Roger that. Clemens playing in it.
Okay.
Ocho Cinco, yeah. I think, just committed.
We'll talk.
Ocho Cinco, is that ESPN 8, the Ocho? No, just kidding. Dr. La Rosa, again.
I think it's Ocho. I don't know.
Yeah, Ocho Cinco. That's his name now, his last
Ocho
name.
Ocho Cinco.
Dr. La Rosa, I could only imagine knowing you, the thoughts going through your head. So if you don't mind, wrap up some of your thoughts before we say goodbye.
There's so many thoughts swirling in my head, but you know, the first one that comes to mind is that I just feel so blessed and grateful to have met you today and heard your story. And I'm also here. If you think I could help any of your efforts in any way, please, I'm just a phone call or a text away. And I mean that. So, you know, reach out if you do think there's anyone I can help in your world. This is how it happens. And, you know, I just feel so incredibly inspired by your whole story and the 11-year process that you took and all the different ways that you thought of helping others based on your situation is just the true, true epitome and testament for walking tall and, you know, turning something positive and finding a way to help others based on something that you went through that was unimaginable. So I just thank you so much for your time to be with us, to get to know you. I feel privileged to be part of this today.
Yeah, same. And Mark, as you know, and as you mentioned, if not for the Abilities Expo in Chicago a few weeks ago, you and I would not have crossed paths. And whatever higher being it is any of us believe in, that happened for a reason. And I only could imagine this was the start of a relationship. And you just inspire the heck out of me, man. Your story is miraculous. Your surviving in the way in which you have is so inspiring. And thank you for joining us. Thank you so much. And before we sign off, I want to just ask you, as you know, we're the Walking Tall Movement, and we have a little saying where we tell others to walk tall in their lives. And so I want to ask you, what does that mean for you if I were to say, hey, Mark, walk tall, right? And in your community, some can't walk, some are short, some, you know, all these things. But like, what does that instill upon you? Say, hey, Mark, walk tall.
You know, just keep going. You know, just, you know, walking tall just means to me, I wish you had given me this question ahead of time.
I'm good at that.
No, it's just, you know, it's truly just, you know, pick yourself up. Like, you know what? You know, the beginning part, right? Pick it up, walk tall. Like it's get up, get your head up, get moving, like start, you know, have confidence and believe that you will be okay. And I believe you will. Right.
Yeah.
And I do want to put out there that event at the Rough Riders is August 4th or August 5th. I got to check. It's called the Celebrity Softball Game. And yes, you could definitely come as my guest.
You're in. You know, Todd and Cia live like a block away from each other. But Mark, anyways, we're getting ready to wrap up. I want to give you the floor. Where can folks connect with you? What websites can you promote? Let everyone know how they can get a hold of Mark Fucarile.
So again, Todd and Dr. La Rosa, like, just join the app. It's free. It's in Apple. It's in Google. Create a profile and start sharing inspiration. Start sharing resources that you know about. So it's basically start at Apple in Google Play Store. And if you're not on a smartphone, you can go to a computer. We have the community.mark, M-A-R-C, network. dot world. Everything is like dot world when it comes to the MARC network, because the MARC network will be a global network, because there's 1.8 billion people, bigger than the population of China, that are affected by mobility and disabilities. And they control $13 trillion in spend. So we're going to be our own, you know, basically our own economy. Yeah, to go to the remarkablefoundation.com is the website for the nonprofit organization, if you feel like donating there. And that's REMARCABLE Foundation. And then the MARC Network, and that's MARCnetwork.world. We're on Instagram, LinkedIn, social media.
Is it possible to see that QR code once again?
Yeah, if you can, folks, scan that QR code. See, we'll put that up behind stage. And Mark, thank you so much. And, you know, we do tell, as we do sign off, we always encourage our listeners that those two little words that we talked about either, you know, earlier, and that's walk tall. And we always would love for you to lead us in a good walk tall to sign off. But I want to just say thank you so much, Mark. You're an inspiration. I can't wait to get to know more about you and become closer tied and see how we can help change the world. So, Mark, if you don't mind, lead us in a good walk tall and we'll sign off.
Hey, stay walking tall.
Walk tall, everybody. Have a great
walk
rest
tall,
of the day.
Everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you, brother.
Take care.